This is Fresh Air. I'm Marty Moss-Cohen. Nina Blanchard knows a pretty face when she sees one. Blanchard ran her own modeling agency on the West Coast for nearly 35 years and is credited with making Cheryl Teagues, Sherry Belafonte, and Christie Brinkley household names. She gave Sharon Stone and Renee Russo their start in modeling before they went on to acting. Nina Blanchard called it quits last spring, saying she was exhausted, worn out by the constant pressure to feed the fashion industry's hunger for a new face. She sold her super agency to Ford Models, and she's just written her first book, a novel called The Look. It's a fictional account of the high-pressure, high-stakes world of modeling. One of the characters in the book is a successful agent like Nina Blanchard named Jessica Cartwright. The novel begins with Cartwright parked in a limo outside a newsstand, watching the public buy up the fashion magazines that feature her models on their covers.
The excitement of seeing your discovery on the cover of a magazine, particularly a big magazine, is the most exciting thing about the business, because it's not just that you're excited for her to be truthful about it, it just validates me, you know, to be honest.
Well, Jessica questions her profession, feeling that perhaps it's promoting a kind of image, a kind of beauty that's really problematic. I'm curious when you began to question what it was that you were doing and what it was about this industry that you were involved in.
Well, I probably began, in all truth, I began to question it when I got older. Because the girls were getting younger, I was getting older. And it really does, it gets to you. There isn't any question. You might say, listen, you're an intelligent, educated woman. What is your problem with this? You don't have to worry about these young girls. Well, that ain't true. The fact is that you don't, it's hard to go in every day. And this is a very, I don't care whether, it's not vain, it's not vanity. It just has to do with, I don't want to look at them anymore. You know, they're so young, and I don't know of anything that can stop that process. And you can't look at them and say, oh, she'll get old, because you might not be around by the time she gets old enough for you not to worry about it anymore.
So you really felt a kind of uncomfortableness looking at yourself, I guess, in the mirror.
No question.
And then looking at these young beauties.
Whether I should admit that or not, I don't care. It's the truth.
Well, let me start in the beginning then. You started your modeling agency in 1961.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think your talents were?
I tell you what I think. I've often wondered, the only thing an agent does is you have to be able to spot a face. If you don't have that, you will never, ever be an agent of any import. It just won't happen.
Let me just stop you there. What does that mean, then, to spot a face?
It means that you can look, you have to look at the girl and the picture. And if you look at the picture first, if you see something, if you understand that she's photogenic, and you feel that there's something in the eyes, something in the face, something that jumps out at you from the picture, it has to jump out at you, then you will do everything to get a hold of that girl. Now, where did I get that? You know, I don't know, because I was a lousy artist. It didn't come from that. It probably came, I think, as I look back on it, from the 8 years that I spent sitting in control rooms in the early days in New York City at NBC.
You talk about a model being photogenic, and I know that there's that sort of subjective and probably hard to describe quality that somebody has when they're photogenic. Is it more important to look good on a page or look good in person if you're a model?
On a page. No, it's really not that subjective, because being photogenic really has to do with the shape of the skull. Because if you even think about some of the great stars, male or female, it's like the great Garbo, you know, I always talked about her cheekbones. all the great stars from Errol Flynn, all of those men that had that great look. It's the way the light hits the bones in the face. And if you have a wonderfully darling, round, chubby face, it ain't gonna happen at all. You just don't have the bones. The skull, the shape of the skull is wrong. Not wrong, but it doesn't photograph the same way as that the one that has the planes in the face.
What would you say is the difference between a model and a supermodel? What makes somebody a supermodel?
Well, the girl that becomes the supermodel is the one that is able to sell product. You know, if someone does an ad for Estee Lauder, Revlon, whomever, and a lot of the great supermodels have gotten, you know, do cosmetic contracts. But if that product just absolutely runs off the shelf when she's in the ad, then she gets up into that supermodel category. Plus the fact that people are willing to pay rather enormous sums for her.
The Calvin Klein ads have really pushed the envelope, and, mm-hmm. and the ones I'm talking about are the ones that show teenagers in provocative
yes.
sexual
yeah.
poses.
Right.
What are your thoughts about that?
My attitude about the ads is it's not the lack of clothing. It's not the fact that it's some underwear. It has to do with the poses. And I think that I think those are poses. I personally find them offensive. Love Calvin's clothes. I like Calvin. But I found them offensive, but it obviously sold jeans.
My guest is agent-turned-novelist Nina Blanchard. Her book is called The Look. More after a short break. This is Fresh Air. Let's get back to Nina Blanchard. Her novel, The Look, is about the fashion industry. I'm curious about how much plastic surgery you think goes on in the modeling industry. It certainly goes on in the regular world as well, but it offers the option. It doesn't make you 6'2", but it certainly can change your features around.
Well, you know, when I was first in the business, I remember having a long talk with an editor of Vogue, and she said, you know, we do not like to work with girls that have had plastic surgery. We don't like particularly nose jobs because they're always obvious. And she was right. Very few girls that have had their noses changed ever managed to get into the upper echelon. However, the biggest, you know, plastic surgery, certainly breast enhancement, there's an enormous amount of that. I try to discourage it because a number of the girls that have had it have had some bad results and have had to have them removed. Not all of them. But does it increase their, if a girl is not concave, but if she's small and she has breast enhancement, as they call it, will she work more? There's no question she'll work more.
But that's different. I mean, I'm old enough to remember that the Twiggy stage when women were paper thin, certainly twig thin, and had almost no breasts, a very boyish look.
There was a look, but, you know, the whole country didn't do that because the whole country never does. It's what we see in the media. It's what we see in the magazines. Now, we can look at Kate Moss. Now, Kate doesn't starve herself. She's a beautiful young woman. That's the weight that she is. And Twiggy was, I think, a little bit thinner even than Kate. But you don't see women across the United States go out. You know, I just came from Ohio. And you go into a mall there, you don't see girls looking like Twiggy. And I don't think they really want to. So there's, you know, the fashion industry basically is New York, Milan, Paris, and all the big German catalogs are shot on South Beach in Miami now, which is strange, but they are. And Los Angeles, and then the smaller markets like Dallas and Chicago. But there's a whole other country in there that, you know, is not what we look at once you get into this fashion industry, you get an attitude where you look at clothing and you say, ugh, what bad taste. You have to break away from that because it becomes terribly... It isn't that good taste is not important. I think it is. Because what does dressing well mean? What does looking good mean? It means you've got a good arrangement of color and space, and you have things that, you know, you look good. I think some of the American women dress like toads because I don't think they care. But the fact is that a lot of them, the fashion magazines, do not teach them anything. They never have, and they probably never will.
What do you think, though, about the kinds of standards that the modeling industry sets? And it's hard not to be influenced by it, whether you're just standing in line at the checkout counter and you're looking at the faces on the
right.
covers of all those magazines. You're actually buying the magazines and looking at them. It's hard not to feel that you don't measure up.
I absolutely agree with you. And I think that you have to understand what it's about, what fashion is about. Fashion is about big business. Fashion is about money. Fashion is not really about fashion. That's what it's about. The magazines, if you look even at the best of the fashion magazines, you see what keeps them going. It's not their subscriptions, it's the advertising. If the advertising wasn't in there, if you go through, you manage to come to the editorial section after about 50 pages or 60 pages of advertising. The editorial section is not that big. They have some interesting ads. I mean, some interesting stories. But it's not about anything but money. It's about selling cosmetics. It's about selling clothing.
But as a consumer, you can't get past the fact that the products are draped on these people whose looks seem almost impossible to have.
I totally agree with you. And the only comment I have, and I find it a problem, but if... Let's say they were to, and a lot of women complain. If I do lectures, they'll say, oh, they always use these young, pretty girls, and, you know, they don't have any lines, and no, no. However, what if we were to take those women and put them in the clothes, or put them in with the cosmetics, a woman, let's say, in her 40s or 50s, because she's the woman that buys the cosmetics. It's not the young girl that buys the expensive cosmetics. And it's not the young girl in high school that buys Valentino. So what if we put them in the clothes and put them on the pages of the magazine? What would we sell?
What do you think?
Nothing.
Because it's a fantasy?
Absolutely. Absolutely. That's what it's about. I mean, you can't think, if you think about some of your... Well, let's say your neighbors or coworkers, the people that go and buy these things, and or just any average woman. Well, why don't they use average women, some of the women say to me? Because you wouldn't sell anything if you used people. Let's say I buy clothing or I buy cosmetics. If I saw me in an ad, I ain't going to buy it. Not for a minute.
Well, I'm still stuck on the way these models look. And do any of them look as good in real life as they do on the pages after they've had their makeup and their hair done and they're dressed in beautiful, expensive clothing and the lighting is absolutely perfect?
Oh, of course they do. Absolutely. There is no question that there are some, you know, some of the models, this is just not all paint and paste. The face is there. Now, they may, with the makeup off, of course, they don't look like the cover of Vogue or any of these ads that they've been in, but that's a symmetrical, lovely face. I mean, I represented Sharon Stone for 10 years. And Sharon, I mean, that is a beautiful face, whether she has makeup on or no makeup on. Rene Russo, makeup or no makeup, a gorgeous face. Cheryl Teagues, some of the young 14, 15-year-olds, Kate Moss without makeup. It's an attractive face. It's a photogenic face. Yes, they do look. People say, oh, she didn't look good at all without her makeup. They're not ugly without their makeup. because people think that, oh, it's all makeup. I mean, I could look like that with makeup. Well, that's not true. You can't. You just can't.
You just got out of the fashion industry, decided to call it quits. Was there some event that made you realize that you'd had enough?
Yeah, there were a couple of events. I think that I got very tired of, you know, the first 10 years in the business, I had a lot of fun. I wasn't very rich, I didn't have any money, but I had a lot of fun. The second 10 years, I started becoming very successful, making a lot of money. And the last 10 years, the last 14 years, actually, you just kind of have to put your back up against a wall and keep it there, because otherwise you're going to get knifed. And I found that it wasn't any fun anymore. It really was not fun, not for me, because it's totally driven by money now. Totally driven. And I think what I call the I wants that some of the agents have, and the extent of the size of their greed lets them do things that is so terrible. It's not just greed. They want that star. They try to, models move from one agency to another, and you just say, is it this going to be this kind of damn turmoil all day long? And it reached a point where, when you reach a point and you just don't want to go in, do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
The only thing that I found exciting, again, was new face would come in, and I could get on the phone right away and say, you know, Jim, you've got to see this girl. She's spectacular. But I think also a lot of it, I was a good agent. An agent can only find, they don't get you the work. What they do is find the outlet for you and they negotiate. That's what an agent does.
Do you miss anything about the industry?
Oh, sure I do. Of course I do. I miss a lot of things that I miss. There's certain people in the industry that I adored. I had great fun with a lot of them. There were people that I would talk to on the phone, some of the photographers with a great sense of humor. And there were certain things in the office during the day. There would be funny things that would happen. And there used to be a kid that would come in. He came in about every 3 days, and he had this kind of bizarre dyed orange hair. Very unattractive guy. And the first time he came in, and I don't remember how it started, he used to come in and say, "Anything for me today, Nina?" I'd say, "Not today, honey." You know, I have no idea who he was. He was some kind of a lunatic from the streets. And there were things that were humorous, that were fun, and some of the things the agents did that you just didn't believe, and all of that stuff that went on. And there were a lot of the kids, when they used to drop by the agency all the time, and they were fun. You know, they had... Mm-hmm. There was laughter, and that there's a lot of stuff that I miss about it. I don't miss... see, a lot of these kids have a lot of pain when it isn't happening anymore, you know, and it is so hard to say to a model, "Well, now this, what's happening with my career? I'm not getting any work." I don't want to say to her, "You're too old," because no one wants you anymore. You can't do that. So you let her come in and say, "I'm going to get a better agent." You say, "Well, gee, I really understand, honey, because I can't do it." And that is really hard. The hardest part was to say no to these kids that came in. It just took its toll on me.
Well, Nina Blanchard, we are out of time, and I thank you for joining us today on Fresh Air.
Thank you.
Nina Blanchard's novel is called The Look.